Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 445 for September 29th, 2013. This time around, I'm in Grimsby, Ontario for 40 Creek Distillery's annual Whiskey Weekend. Coming up in a few minutes.
So I said, I'm going to make a handcrafted Canadian whiskey. And she said, fantastic. When will it be ready? I said, about 10 years from now. She said, no shit.
Most distilleries blend their grains at the start of the distilling process, but 40 Creek's John Hall does it differently. He distills his rye, corn, and barley separately, matures them separately, and only then does he blend them together to create 40 Creek's Barrel Select. That gives us a rare chance to deconstruct a whiskey, and we'll do just that on this week's Whiskey Cast in depth. I'll also have your voice, the calendar of events, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Last time around, I reported on the economic jumpstart bourbon is giving the economy in the Louisville area, as well as the entire Commonwealth of Kentucky. Look for at least two more distillery expansion projects to be announced in the near future. My sources indicate Maker's Mark and Beam may finally be about to pull the trigger on a large-scale expansion that's been on the drawing board for several years now. Maker's Mark President Rob Samuels isn't ready to confirm those plans yet, though.
We have another warehouse that's under construction, and you know we're investing to support continued growth while staying true to the handmade essence of what we do at the distillery, which is really exciting.
Any chance of an expansion at the distillery itself coming soon?
Nothing that I can share with you today, but stay tuned.
So there's something coming, theoretically.
There could be. We're obviously, as a single source of supply, we spend a lot more time thinking about what the world's going to look like 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now than next month, next quarter, or next year. And we really do think that this is going to be a really sustained period of growth for within bourbon, premium bourbon. And so...
Watch this space, right? Meanwhile, Four Roses over in Lawrenceburg is planning an expansion of its own. Master distiller Jim Rutledge says sales have skyrocketed so much that the distillery needs to expand just to meet future demands.
We haven't made any decisions yet. We will be making some, but we're looking at expansion of our distillery operations. We'll have to increase the number of fermenters we have, whether we put in a new larger still or a slightly smaller still to complement our 48-inch still, 36-inch still, something like that. We're designing and planning right now, so we haven't got there yet. We're also going to be expanding and building a new bottling facility and case goods shipping facility, so there's a lot we're looking forward to down the road.
When might you have a decision on doing the expansion, or at least which level of expansion?
Well, we're working on it right now. We'll probably decide something, hopefully by the end of this year, when we get started. A decision's, but we have to do something. So when we commence and the designs, that's what's we're working on, and that will take some time. So it'd be nice by the end of the year, but if it's not, it'd be very soon afterward.
And as you point out, you have to do something. You're pretty much running 24/7, right?
We've always done that. Our distillery runs, we have one day down, and that's Christmas Day. All the other days are running 24/7 with one day a week for an extended cleanup of the distillery.
And you can't even meet production needs with that, right?
No. Well, we are right now, but in a year or two we won't be able to. So we have time to make these decisions and get started, but we've got to do something, make decisions now to be ready when we do need them.
There's one project that is still reportedly in the planning stages, but not officially confirmed by anyone within Diageo. That would be the revival of distilling at the old Stitzel Weller Distillery in Louisville. Diageo's need for that distillery is becoming more urgent. In a story you're hearing first here on Whiskey Cast, very reliable sources have told me that Diageo will have to find a new supplier for bullet bourbon sooner rather than later, and in fact within the next 6 months. Four Roses has supplied the bulk spirit that goes into Bulleit since Tom Bulleit created the brand, but as we heard from Jim Rutledge, his distillery is trying to keep up with the demand for its own whiskeys. I've been told that Diageo has been given notice that its supply from Four Roses will be cut off next spring, and with every major distillery in Kentucky running at capacity right now, that doesn't leave Diageo with many options. I tried to get in touch with Tom Bulleit this week, but we weren't able to connect. I'll have more details on this developing story as they're available. In other news, we have a lot of new whiskeys being announced this week. Irish Distillers is unveiling a new 21-year-old expression of Redbreast this weekend at Whiskey Live Paris. It's the oldest single pot still Irish whiskey available and the oldest one from Irish Distillers with an age statement. I got an update from Brendan Buckley of Irish Distillers.
The guys here, you know, Billy and Barry and so forth, have been looking at where next on Redbreast. And I guess the logical progression, having done 12-15, would have been 18. So they looked at an 18, and they came back, and we discussed it. They said, you know what, it's good, and it's a new flavor. But they said, we got something even more special, which is 21. So we kind of broke a convention, and we just made a big jump from 15 to 21, and it's pretty awesome. And I think when it, you know, hits the shelves, it's going to probably go from the shelves pretty quickly. Yeah.
Is this going to be a permanent expression? Is it limited? How is it going to work?
The permanent expression? We've got the stocks. It's been penciled in to our whiskey model. And so from here on in, there will be Redbreast 21 available to the world. Yeah.
Now, this will be the second release this year of a single pot still behind the Powers signature release that came out earlier in September, right at the end of August. What else can we expect to see? Because you've said you're going to release two single pot stills a year. Yeah. Is that it for 2013?
Yes and no. That is the end of the two ongoing full-time releases. We have some single cask expressions coming out. Le Maison de Whiskey are actually about to launch a new Middleton single cask, which is going to be really interesting because it's our first foray with Middleton into a sherry single cask. Yeah. So that'll be obviously quite limited. It's a one-off. It's a single cask, so by its nature, it'll be limited. But because of sherry butt, it's going to deliver quite a few more bottles than a normal bourbon barrel. So I'm assuming that's going to be a lot of demand. Other than that, then we're into next calendar year. Of course, we'll be delivering two more single pot stills at the minimum next year. We have one already penciled in for April next, which is, I think, a lot of Irish whiskey drinkers and Irish pot still drinkers in the U.S. will be really excited about. So you'll have to wait and hear more about that.
Redbreast 21 will be available in Ireland, the UK, the USA, France, and Germany at first, at a price of around $180 a bottle. Inverhouse released a 40-year-old expression of Hanky Bannister back in 2007, and master blender Stuart Harvey has been given a chance to improve on it. Only about 1,500 bottles of the new Hanky Bannister 40-year-old will be available over the next 3 years, with 500 to be released this year at a price of £800, about $1,285 each. And while I'm talking about older single malts, Kilhoman will be releasing its oldest whiskey yet in October. Of course, it's only 6 years old. 10,000 bottles of the 2007 vintage will be available worldwide. The Glenlivet's latest project will involve members of its Guardians Affinity Group. They're being asked to select from one of three whiskeys created by master distiller Alan Winchester to be bottled as the Glenlivet Guardians chapter next year. You'll find more details on this at the WhiskeyCast website. And those are just some of the week's headlines. You'll find all of the latest whiskey news as it happens at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Caskmasters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
Once again, I'm in Grimsby, Ontario this weekend for 40 Creek Distillery's annual Whiskey Weekend. From here, it's on to Boston for Whiskey Live Boston Wednesday night. I'll have the highlights from Boston on the next Whiskey Cast. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. Got an email or two this week from Neil Bradbury in Newfoundland, Canada. He'd been having problems with the tasting notes on the Whiskey Cast smartphone app. It's the same issue we've had since switching to the new website earlier this year, and after I advised him to bookmark the tasting notes page on the website and use that for now, he emailed to say that that works just fine, and added this: "A colleague introduced me to whiskey just this past year, and it just made sense. I became a voracious consumer of your whiskey cast, as well as Ralphie's amusing and informative vlogs on YouTube. I've tasted several scotches now and started a modest collection of my own. My favorite bottle so far remains the first quality bottle I purchased, a Talisker 10, and I like the phenolic peaty whiskies from Islay. But I am trying to taste a diversity of whiskies from all over Scotland, and indeed the world. It's not an easy proposition as I live in Newfoundland, Canada, so the selection can be limited. I made a visit to the Glenora Distillery in Nova Scotia this summer and self-bottled a small sample of a single 17-year-old cask, and it was actually very good. I really enjoy it, perhaps for its departure from the others I enjoy. Sorry for the rambling email, but I hope it conveys my newfound pleasure in whiskey and how you and WhiskeyCast have really been a major portal into the world of whiskey. Thanks for your work. Neil, welcome to the world of whiskey. Thank you for listening and for your emails." I posted another mystery distillery challenge photo on our Facebook page this week. It was a shot of an unusual airplane hangar-style warehouse, and I really thought it was going to be a challenge this time, but it didn't take long. Richard Nagel was the first one with the correct answer. The warehouse is at Kilbeggan Distillery in Ireland. Well done, Richard. And if you have a question, a suggestion, or something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com. You can also email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. October will be another busy month for whiskey lovers around the world. The U.S. chapter of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society kicks off its fall series of single malt extravaganzas on Thursday night in Chicago. Indy's Whiskey and Fine Spirits Expo will be in Indianapolis on Friday night. The Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival wraps up this coming weekend in Sweden. The weekend also brings us Whiskey Live Dublin, the Whiskey Show in London, and the Salzburg Whiskey Festival in Austria. The next week, there's the Whiskey Jubilee and Whiskey Fest in New York City, along with a lot of other tastings going on in New York, the On the Rocks Whiskey and Spirits Festival in Washington, D.C., and Whiskey Live in Los Angeles, October 17th. You'll find nearly 300 different whiskey events on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. If you missed this week's Laphroaig Live webcast, you can catch the replay at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Jerry McCarthy, stillhouse operator, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
There was a time then we brought in 12 barrels, and I was asked to, I was foreman in the warehousing at the time, and it was to be handled by Nolan, and then myself, and the supervisor in question, Dennis McSweeney. And we put it together, made it up. I was told to band them, strap them, get them onto the back of a lorry. They were being shipped off up to Dublin. And they were special. And I was told it was liquid gold. It was actually Redbreast.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
I'm in Grimsby, Ontario this weekend on the shores of Lake Ontario for 40 Creek Distillery's annual Whiskey Weekend. John Hall and his colleagues at 40 Creek invited me to come up and moderate a couple of tasting panels during the weekend. It's become a tradition for John to release 40 Creek's annual limited edition on the final weekend of September. And while the final count isn't in yet, several thousand bottles of this year's limited edition Heart of Gold have already been picked up at the distillery by 40 Creek fans who reserved them online this past summer.
Whiskey Weekend started 7 years ago, and it started out as a release of my very first limited edition, which was called 40 Creek Small Batch. Small Batch was so popular that I decided, and I had been doing a few other things, so I decided that I'd bring out another limited edition the next year, that same weekend. And that one was my double barrel, when I aged it in Kentucky bourbon barrels. And it just kept growing and growing from there.
And now you're at the point where you've got people that come in from all over Canada and the U.S. for this weekend, right?
Yes, I just finished signing a bottle from someone who flew in from Texas. The people that flew in from Alberta, Saskatchewan, BC, British Columbia, and the East Coast as well. And all over Ontario, of course.
Are you surprised by all this?
I guess it's the way things go when you're in the whiskey world, you know. If you're a whiskey enthusiast, you like to share those experiences. And to be able to share them right at a whiskey distillery is quite remarkable, because quite often whiskey festivals are held in convention halls and hotels and things like that, banquet rooms and hotels and things like that. But we hold it right at the distillery, so they get to see the barrels, they get to, you know, walk the distillery and get to understand the process that, we use for making whiskey.
This week on WhiskeyCast In Depth, I wanted to share part of Saturday afternoon's tasting session with you. Davin DeCurgamo of CanadianWhiskey.org and the whiskey lassie, Joanne McInnes, joined John and me with about 100 other whiskey lovers.
One of the cool things that 40 Creek does that is unlike literally any other whiskey maker in the world that John came up with is that most of the distillers around the world that use a mixture of grains will throw all those grains into the hopper at the beginning of the process. They cook them, mash them, and then create the beer from them that later becomes whiskey. What John has done is completely unique in that he does each grain separately, mashing it, distilling it, and maturing it. Then he brings it together at the end of the process to create 40 Creek Barrel Select and the other 40 Creek expressions. What this gives us is a chance to actually deconstruct a whiskey, which is what we're going to do with these first four samples that John's going to take us through. The first three samples in the front row on your table are the rye, barley, and the corn whiskey that's all been produced across the road over at the distillery. And we're going to get a chance to taste those separately and then see how they come together to create a whole that is more than just the sum of its parts in 40 Creek Barrel Select. So, John, why don't you take us through the, starting with the rye, and let's see how these whiskeys come together to create the whole.
Terrific, thanks, Mark. So welcome everybody to the 7th annual 40 Creek Whiskey Weekend. I see a lot of familiar faces, and I also see some new ones, and I'd like to thank you very much for taking your time out today to come and visit the distillery. As Mark said, these first three samples are barrel samples. You can't buy them on the, what I call in Ontario, the LCBO, the LCBO. They are barrel samples, so they're not commercially produced. I sampled the barrels and then diluted the alcohol content down to approximately 40%. But the treat is they're all 100% noble grains, what I call noble grains, the rye for Canada, barley for Scotland, and corn for Kentucky, bourbons. And these are the three primary whiskeys that I make, distill, and age over at the distillery. So the first one is rye. It's 100% rye. This one is probably about a 7 or 8 year old. I can't, I don't have my notes with me, so I can't remember which one I picked. This is what in Canada we can call it rye, or we can call it Canadian whiskey. But by federal food and drug regulations, it doesn't have to have any rye in it to be called rye whiskey. But that's because most Canadians called Canadian whiskey rye because they used rye in developing their whiskeys. So the first one is a rye. Rye is tends to be spicy and fruity. And that was typical, very typical of Canadian whiskey. So this would be like similar to a Canadian whiskey, probably 30 or 40 years, maybe 50 years ago. It's one of the more expensive grains. It's more expensive than corn.
when I distill, after I distill it, I put it into a light toasted oak barrel. When you go back to the distillery, you'll see examples of that in our hospitality room. And what that means is that I toast the inside of the barrel just very lightly, because I don't want to lose all of the fruitiness and spiciness that I've achieved in the rye. And by just giving it a light toast, the whiskey doesn't penetrate too far into the oak, so that the oak doesn't overwhelm and take over all of the flavor of the grain. That's why I do it on a pot still as well, because on a pot still, it's easy to capture the alcohol when you distill, but it's much more difficult to capture the flavors. And you can capture the flavors on a copper pot still versus a column still. Now, the column still was invented by an Irishman by the name of Coffey, and it was a great cost-cutting method of making whiskey, because the pot still is a batch still, so it's labor-intensive, whereas a column still, you can run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He first sold it, none of the Irish distillers bought it from him, and it was first used in Scotland. And then it ended up being used in Ireland and also used in North America. And a lot of whiskeys are done on column stills these days. My only concern about that was then you have to totally rely on the oak to give your whiskey flavor, because you don't get a lot of the grain flavor coming over. So this one, this first glass, is typical rye. You get some fruitiness, you get some spiciness.
I'm getting a little bit of orange peel in there. Devin, Joanne, what are you getting?
Well, you know, I'm surprised. I found like that grainy chocolate, right, not even at the end, like just
almost like ground up cocoa beans?
Yes, Mark, yeah, exactly. I love the toffee notes on this. And I asked John, and he confirmed that comes from the light toasting of the barrel. Those toffee notes, that's real oak caramel that soaks into the oak caramel. I mean, there's loads of caramel in whiskey, obviously, but I just love this flavor in this one. But yeah, the spiciness, and I'm also tasting, there's something chocolatey in here. And it's almost a feeling on the roof of your mouth.
So that's the first component of my whiskeys, is the rye whiskey. As many of you know, I've been a winemaker in my past life, and a winemaker's always taught to bring out the best taste characteristics of each grape variety, like the soft roundness of a Merlot or the spicy tropical notes of a Gewurztraminer. Well, when I started approaching whiskey in 1992, to make whiskey, I sort of used the same approach, in that I know that rye doesn't taste like barley and barley doesn't taste like corn. So the first thing I did was take a look at what are the noble grains, like noble grapes. And although they're not classified as noble grains, I thought of rye because of Canada. I thought of corn because of bourbon in the United States, and barley because of Scotland. So that's what I decided I would use as my three grains. The second glass is the barley whiskey. I call it barley whiskey because I'm in Canada. If I was in Scotland, I could call it a single malt scotch. But I call it barley whiskey. And barley, what I like about barley is it brings out a lot of nuttiness. Barley tends to be a little bit more aggressive. I find it tends to be a little bit more aggressive than the rye whiskey. So I age that barley whiskey in a medium charred American white oak barrel.
Joanne, what notes are you getting on this when you nose this?
I always find barley brings out I don't want to say a kind of a cereal or almost fresh cut hay, but that's usually what I get is a really clean, like almost, it's hard to describe, but it's almost like if you've ever had oatmeal right out of the pot, like it's a very clean, very nice cereal kind of green smell to it. And if you actually go back now to your rye, you'll notice that what John was saying about how aggressive barley is, you should almost get almost nothing or a sweeter smell on the rye if you go back and forth between the barley, because it is a really aromatic.
I get a bit of a lemony note in this, almost like a lemon peel.
Yeah, astringent. Mm-hmm. It's a good.
Yeah, there's some bitterness, which is like the pithiness of like lemon peel. But I'm finding grain dust. You know, like the inside of a granary. You know the way that smell you get? It smells big and rich, even though it's not very strong.
And you're not getting any of the sort of iodine aromas that you'll get from a peated scotch. That's because Pete was sick that day. He didn't come to work. So it's not a smoky type of a scotch taste. There's no peat used in drying the grain.
It's very much more like a Highlander or a Speyside type scotch in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it holds up very well on its own as a malt whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
You ever think about selling it as a malt whiskey on its own or even as a special edition once in a while?
I've been asked that question many times, Mark, both on the rye and on the barley and on the corn whiskey. But my problem is that I like to try and bring out complexity in the whiskey and various taste nuances. So I find that as a winemaker, you know, I really, really got tired of vinifying Chardonnay, you know, because Chardonnay is Chardonnay is Chardonnay. I like doing the more of the blending where I can bring out like a fine California Meritage or a Bordeaux, where you're aging three independent grape varieties, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Cab Franc, bring the best characteristics out of all three and then bring them together so that, as you said, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Always my approach to whiskey making is that it has to have a great aroma, it has to be complex, it has to invite you in. It's just like if you smell something you don't like, you're not going to eat it,
mm-hmm.
right? So it has to have a great aroma. It has to capture you. And that's just like the beginning of a book. How many books have you picked up and you started reading and then you put them back down, right? Because it didn't catch you in the beginning. So that's what I think a whiskey has to do. And then in the middle part of the book is all about character development, plots, subplots. And you want that to keep your interest in that novel. And that's what you want in the whiskey. You want to be able to go back and taste it. Oh, that's just, that flavor is just starting to come evolve. And this is after like 5 minutes of tasting and enjoying the whiskey. And then the finish has to be smooth and memorable. The last thing you want to do is to have a harshness that just bites you back. Right? You don't want the whiskey to hurt you. So it has to be a nice, memorable finish that invites you back to take another sip or to try another taste expression of that particular whiskey. Just like you'll go out at the, some books have a terrible finish or terrible ending. You say, why did I waste all my time reading that book when the ending sucks? Right, so you want a wonderful, memorable ending so that you'll go out and buy another book from that author.
Well, so that's one of the reasons. Which is the finishing grain in this one, right?
Yes, the corn. I like using corn whiskey because it really reminds me of it like a heavy-duty Australian Shiraz. Corn brings a lot of weight to the whiskey. It's the sweetest of the three grains, and you'll find a lot of creaminess comes through, and it gives it acts as a nice base for body so that your whiskey doesn't taste watery. So on the aromas, you'll get banana, toasted coconut,
a little bit of honey.
Honey like crazy.
A little
crazy.
Bit of clover honey.
Honey.
Honey?
Yep, definitely honey.
Yeah. Devin, you're fond of
it. Well, I'm really enjoying this. While John was talking, I was letting that barley whiskey develop in my mouth, and the grain really became big, and that grassiness that Joanne was talking about, and then at the end there was this really pleasant, refreshing bitterness, which makes you want more. And that may be, John, I'll ask you if that's where your moorishness and the finish is coming from. In this corn whiskey, yeah, it's big, and it feels greasy in your mouth. It's really quite got a lot of body. What I'm noticing in this, and there's a lot of flavor, a lot of sweetness as well, but I'm really noticing a lot of the spicy pepper. And I would expect more spice to come from the rye, but in this I'm finding a lot of peppery spice here, and I know what happens when you mix peppery spice with the oak spices that you get in the rye, where you get the cinnamon and the cloves and the ginger and things like that. The one, they reinforce each other without getting hotter. And so this corn whiskey, Mark, I think is awesome. And if you've been asked to release these, the barley and the rye separately, so I'm now gonna ask you for the corn.
Yes, they are very nice whiskeys on their own. And there's no doubt there's that spiciness that comes off on the back finish of the corn. Yes.
Let's move on to barrel select and put all three of these whiskeys together. I know John will not tell us which ratios, because that's a secret.
Well, then you'd have to come up here and live in Grimsby, right?
I'd do that gladly. But tell us about what you're looking for when you combine these three to create barrel select.
Yeah. So the fourth one is 40 Creek Barrel Select. And the way you get to barrel select is that you take the first three glasses and you put them together. Being a winemaker from 1970, back in 1992, I heard about the Scotch guys were using sherry casks to finish their whiskey. At one time, all Scotch whiskey was aged in Spanish sherry casks. But then there was the mid-1800s, they had the Spanish Civil War, and the Scotch guys couldn't get any sherry casks. So they started buying bourbon barrels from the guys in Kentucky and aging their scotch in bourbon barrels. But quite often they will use a barrel, a different type of barrel to finish off their the aging process. Once they bring their scotch whiskey together, they'll put it into a sherry cask or a port wood, or I think some of them have used Sauterne casks. So this one, 1992, as an independent, I couldn't afford to get on a plane and fly to Spain to buy sherry casks. But being a winemaker from the 1970s, I knew how to make sherry. So that's the type of wine that was being consumed in Ontario. Sherries and ports. In fact, inexpensive sherries and ports. A bottle of sherry, probably no one here that can remember how much a bottle of sherry, Ontario sherry, sold for in 1970. It was $1.05.
Oh boy.
And we used to have a saying in the industry, it was come alive for $1.05. And then do it again for $2.10. So in 1992, I bought some brand new American white oak barrels. I made an Oloroso style sherry with Niagara grown grapes. I put it into the oak barrels, aged it till 2002, and then I dumped the sherry And now I had my sherry casks. And I knew how to make sherry because the first winery I worked for, 40% of it was owned by the Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry people. And they were the people that taught me how to make sherry. So I dumped the sherry, and then I brought these three glasses together and put them into the sherry cask because they needed to hang out together. You know, you can't just put the three together and put it into a bottle. And I really wanted to use the sherry cask to help bring out some nuttiness and let these things mellow out. So glass number four is 40 Creek Barrel Select. So you're going to get all of the aromas that you found in the rye, in the barley, and in the corn, the fruitiness, some of the oak vanilla spiciness. The smoothness. And now what you find is that that does not taste like any one of these single ones. So those three are brought together along with a 5 to 6 months in the sherry cask to get that. Now, I thought this whiskey tasted pretty good. My friends liked it, but I really needed an outside opinion. My friends liked it probably because they wanted to stay in stock. My wife really liked it too. I remember back in 1992 when I came home and told her that I was going to make a handcrafted Canadian whiskey. She's been married to a winemaker for over 25 years. And she said, fantastic, because she's a whiskey drinker. She never ever became a wine drinker, even though she was married to a winemaker. So I said, I'm going to make a handcrafted Canadian whiskey. And she said, fantastic, when will it be ready? I said, about 10 years from now. She said, no shit. She said, how do you know people are going to be drinking whiskey 10 years from now? Well, 20 years from now, they're still drinking whiskey.
Right? So. That's right.
That was just part of our tasting session. We also went through four of the limited edition 40 Creek whiskeys, along with the Heart of Gold. I tasted it earlier this year, and you'll find my tasting notes for it at whiskeycast.com. Full disclosure, 40 Creek invited me to take part in this weekend's events and covered my travel expenses for the weekend. However, as with every episode of Whiskey Cast, I maintain editorial control over all of the content in this week's episode. And that's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. Now, you'll find my tasting notes for most of the 40 Creek whiskeys on the Whiskey Cast website, but I've also been tasting some other whiskeys this week as well. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the initial releases in Douglas Lang's new Old Particular range, the Milton Duff 17-year-old single cask scotch. It's bottled at 48.4% ABV. The nose is very aromatic with ginger, a light smokiness, toasted bread, hints of orange peel, and linseed oil. The taste has a good balance of pepper and lemon-lime citrus tartness, along with a hint of linseed oil, and the finish is long and tart with a bit of pepper that lingers nicely. I'm scoring the Old Particular Milton Duff 17-year-old an 89. Tasted the Van Winkle Special Reserve Lot B 12-year-old bourbon this weekend. It's bottled at 45.2% ABV. The nose is warm and toasty with nutmeg, muted cinnamon, honey, brown sugar, and vanilla. The taste is spicy with cinnamon, hints of honey, vanilla, brown sugar, and mild oakiness. And the finish is smooth, lingering, and soft with cinnamon and honey notes. I'm scoring the Van Winkle Special Reserve 12-year-old a 90. I'm adding these tasting notes to the searchable list of more than 1,000 different whiskeys at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events, news updates, the Your Voice page, and a whole lot more. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you this week from the 40 Creek Distillery in Grimsby, Ontario. Thanks to John Hall, Beth Warner, and everyone at 40 Creek for their hospitality this weekend. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.